Spring is here, and you can now get almost anything you need for your sunny days delivered with Uber Eats. What do we mean by almost? Well, you can't get a well-groomed lawn delivered, but you can get a chicken parmesan delivered. A cabana? That's a no. But a banana? That's a yes. A nice tan? Sorry. Nope. But a box fan? Happily, yes. A day of sunshine? No. A box of fine wines? Yes. Uber Eats can definitely get you that. Get almost anything delivered with Uber Eats. Order now. Alcohol in select markets. Product availability may vary by region. See app for details.
The Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe plug-in hybrid is built for the best of both worlds. For the city buzz, for the call of the wild, for finding solitude, for sharing memories, for day trips, and for far-roaming adventures. Because with gas and electric capability, the Jeep Grand Cherokee 4xe inspires you to explore more, to explore it all. Tap the banner to learn more. Jeep is a registered trademark of FCA US LLC.
That Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, but they just disagree on how.
We're gonna get across that wasteland, and we're gonna do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket live. We're trying something different today and we're doing a show while the cricket is still going on. Two matches, well, they were technically supposed to be going on. The Bob Willis Trophy final at Lords between Essex and Somerset, and also the IPL encounter between the Kolkata Knight Riders and the Mumbai Indians, two of the top teams in the tournament. Only one of those matches is still underway. Unfortunately, rain and bad light forced the players off early at Lords, with Somerset 119 for 4 after 44 overs, so a slightly disappointing end to the first day. But there are 5 days available for that match, so in a way, there's plenty of opportunity to force that match to a conclusion. And meanwhile, Kolkata Knight Riders are in the business of trying to chase down 196 to win against the Mumbai Indians in Abu Dhabi. Simon Mann's not with us today because he's taking his daughter to university, as you do in mid-September. But I'm delighted to say we've got a special guest today, all the way from India, where, of course, all the IPL players and coaches aren't, because the IPL is being played in the UAE. And it's Prakash Wakankar, the experienced commentator. Many of you would have heard him on BBC Radio over the years. A very colourful character, very knowledgeable about the Indian game. And Prakash, it's great that you've been able to join us today. Thank you so much for your time late at night in India. Tell us first, what has the Indian public, in these very unusual circumstances, what has it made of this current IPL?
As you may know, and our listeners may be aware, the lockdown is just about beginning to sort of find a little bit of easing out. There's hardly any outdoor sport happening. All the public places are shut. There's no restaurants to go to. And as a result, people have been waiting for the IPL to come on. And I think it's already had absolute record audiences. So to that extent, I think India's grateful that the IPL is happening and the people in India are just enjoying it and enjoying every moment of it.
But I suppose you're not able to actually, I mean, a lot of India, when the IPL's on, people are out in bars and restaurants. And I remember N.P. Singh, who's the sort of commercial boss of Sony, who had the rights for many years before Star took over. He said to me that he noticed, you know, in the early days of the IPL, that lots of restaurants were offering deals where you could watch the coverage in the restaurant and sort of get a cheap meal at the same time. And he was quite annoyed about it because quite a lot of these restaurants hadn't paid their satellite fee or their subscription or whatever to be able to watch Sony.
Yeah.
But at the same time, he thought, but, you know, it's sort of buying into the IPL economy and our coverage and they'll be watching the adverts and all that. So it was very much, it is very much a tradition, is it? It's a sort of social thing to go and watch the IPL, which now you can't do.
Yes, you can't do now, but you'll remember that in that same vein, 3 or 4 years ago, the IPL Governing Council also introduced what they called fan parks, which was actually setting up giant screens in small stadiums or parks or playgrounds around the country in smaller cities and actually having a massive audience there coming out and watching. So yes, it's become a family outing or a family picnic, if you want to use that phrase, though it may not be apt at 11 p.m. at night. But indeed, in many ways, it's been a bond that's brought the family together. And as I think in the early days of T20 cricket, when it began in England, I think the whole idea was to get the family out together, wasn't it? And I think in many ways, places like India are showing that that is very much doable. This year, of course, is an exception for reasons which are beyond anyone's control.
So I suppose, in a way, the IPL has come at a good time for India because you're all locked down. There's no sort of social activity going on. So this is something to get excited about and, in a way, maybe something to escape. Because, in a way, before the IPL, Bollywood was the big thing, still is the big thing. And there's a sort of escapism about Bollywood. But there's a consequence of escapism about the IPL for the man in the street or the woman in the street, too.
There certainly is. And you know, it's a well-known fact, Simon, that the three sort of major passions for Indians in a general sense are Bollywood, cricket, and of course, then the aspect of food. Since food outside the house isn't a possibility at the moment, it's the other two. And as you know well, the IPL in many ways combines parts of Bollywood and cricket. Because some of the teams are owned by film stars. Of course, again, this year you don't have those many visuals of them, but I'm sure they'll turn up as things go along. Preeti Zinta, or Preeti Goodenough, as she's now called after her marriage, was there for the Kings 11 game. Shah Rukh Khan is expected, not for this one, but for the next KKR game, I'm told. So there is that whole glamour mix, which makes for a heady combination. And I have to say that some of the sponsors and commercial terms, which teams which are involved with the IPL, are doing their best to innovate. I mean, you've got these giant screens, haven't you, that we've seen on television where select individual fans are sort of being projected out on the screens. They're doing all of that, multiple contests running, lots of fantasy leagues running, being rewarded with all kinds of freebies. So, yeah, the commercial bandwagon, if you will, has actually taken off.
Yeah,
as a rolls result on. Of the IPL.
It rolls on, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, listen, one of the things they have added, of course, is the crowd noise, which they've really taken to the nth degree in the IPL, because there's quite a lot of screaming and so on. So we're not going to actually have that, but I'm going to add a little bit to this podcast of crowd noise, but more sedate crowd noise. This is the sort of the Lord's hum that's been familiar to the watchers and viewers of cricket over the summer on Sky Sports. Not quite the hysteria that you get at an IPL game, but actually,
I was going to say,
I think actually one or two people have got slightly fed up with the slightly extreme crowd noise that you get at these first few IPL games. But I guess, in a way, it's an evolving process of trying out different things. It's challenged us all to find different ways of covering the game and giving the viewer or the listener a bit more of an experience. Maybe over time they'll tone that down, do you think?
Well, they better do, because I'm one of those who's very irritated. I mean, look, to be honest with you, sometimes silence is not so bad. Stump microphones are there anyway. The commentators do a great job telling us about the game. And I think everybody realizes what it is. So if there's something that is the music in the stadium or whatever, that's fine. That comes through the FX microphones. That's perfectly okay. But to actually overlay this and, as you say, take it to that level where individual names are being chanted by an imaginary crowd of 50,000 or 70,000, maybe a bit much. But hey, who knows? Their research probably telling them that it works for them.
It's interesting. I mean, I suppose looking back at that match yesterday, it was an exciting game between the Rajasthan Royals and the Chennai Super Kings.
Chennai Super Kings.
Yeah, and a very high scoring game, 33 sixes in it. Dhoni hitting a few at the end of the innings, which was sort of academic, I suppose. Do you think sometimes Indian fans, you know, sort of spectators, get fed up with the relentless sixes, or is it actually something that they've always wanted?
Well, Simon, I think I mentioned this to you when we were chatting a little earlier in the afternoon today. There is only 1/6 that most Indians remember and try and forget every single day of their lives when you think about the Sharjah cricket ground. And that was the 6 that of the last ball of an ODI that Javed Miadad hit of Chetan Sharma. The other hundreds and hundreds of others, including Tendulkar's Desert Storm innings in that series against Australia in Sharjah, I think get forgotten. But yeah. Yes, the number of sixes at Sharjah came in real contrast, didn't they, to the Abu Dhabi and Dubai stadiums, which are obviously much larger grounds, where you felt that the bowlers had a chance. In Sharjah, you just get the feeling that the bowlers are on hiding to nothing, really, because mishits, half hits, bottom of the bat strokes, they're just carrying over the ropes as if they were, you know, in a boxing ring, so to speak. And that's really, really going to be hard. I don't know if everyone's going to play equal number of games, but that could well determine net run rates and who knows what else when it comes to the playoffs.
I'll tell you an interesting story about Sharjah, actually, the Sharjah cricket ground, because I got an extraordinary letter from a retired RAF airman about 10 years ago, I suppose. And he said that he must be quite old now, because he said he was stationed in Sharjah in 1943 during the Second World War as an RAF pilot, and they had nothing to do. I'm not even really sure why they were there, but they were on this stationed on this airfield, which was pretty much deserted. There was no activity, there was no fighting. I think they were supplying some forces to Egypt or somewhere, but they weren't really doing a huge amount. And this guy was a cricket fan, and so they started sort of mucking about with a bat and a ball on the runway of this disused or little used airfield. And eventually, you know, one or two of the sort of senior officers sort of got interested and started to join in. And eventually one of them said, look, you know, we need a proper pitch here. So he said, I'll summon a bit of carpet from somewhere. So he got from the officer's mess in another part, I think from maybe Dubai or somewhere else. He managed to get a long piece of carpet, 22 yards long. They laid that down to one side of the runway and started playing quite serious games. And that evolved eventually into a league. And they created things like they got the local workmen to get loads of paint pots and put them round as the boundary, and they created a sight screen out of wood and so on, and built a really proper ground. And this league started, and that was on the site of the Sharjah cricket ground as it is now, which is sort of almost one of the one of the centres of the cricket world, really, with the IPL being staged there. And, you know, so much cricket activity is now going on in the UAE.
There is, absolutely. And you know, I remember the 98, thereabouts, 97, 98, when India and Pakistan used to play fairly regularly in Sharjah. Abdul Rahman Bukhatir, sort of the chief patron, putting it all together. Asif Iqbal, I remember, was actively involved with Mr. Bukhatir. And if I remember right, there were pictures there of almost a concrete strip in the middle of the stadium much before the 90s, with a matting on it. And the rest of the outfield was turf, because they still hadn't worked out how to get the wickets sorted out. And it was only sort of in the early part of the 90s, I think, that the work began. And then through the 90s, Sharjah became one of the first sort of, if you will, neutral destinations for cricket to be played. Yeah, quite an interesting period of time that was. And India and Pakistan were playing very regularly then, which is one of the things you miss in this IPL. Don't want to get into any trouble here, but the fact is, not having Pakistan cricketers in this league just takes a little bit of sheen away, because there are some brilliant ones there, and it'd be great to have them and complete the complement. It's only the first year of the IPL that we had Pakistan cricketers play.
Yeah, that's right. And in fact, you know, one or two of them played a prominent role. There was Sohail Tanvir, who actually hit the winning runs in that first IPL for the Rajasthan Royals, winning it off the last ball, of course, and many others played a role too. This match, 71 for 2 now, the Knight Riders chasing the 195. They're sort of starting to fade a bit at the moment, 10 overs gone. And only a run rate of 7.1, seeking that 196 to win. So you feel they need to do something fairly soon to try and get up to close to this target, 125 from 60 balls. Talking of sort of unexpected things, and you know, it throws up sort of quite unusual situations, the IPL. And I liked yesterday seeing Tom Curran and Sam Curran playing together.
Yes.
You know, playing against each other. Sam playing for Chennai and Tom playing for the Rajasthan Royals. And I don't think, you know, they've played for Surrey together many times, but I doubt if they've ever really too often played against each other. Maybe in the Big Bash, but I suspect not. So this was their first encounter against each other in this IPL. There's an LBW shout and a wicket there to the Mumbai Indians. That was the leg spinner. I didn't actually see who bowled
Chahar.
That. Now, he's new.
Chahar. Deepak Chahar's brother.
Deepak Chahar, yes. Deepak Chahar's brother. So
right. Deepak Chahar's brother. Deepak is the one who bowls seam up for Chennai, and Chahar is the leggy.
Yes.
Who's his cousin, actually.
But it was just interesting to find out what Tom Curran thought of his encounter with his brother. So let's just hear a little bit of what he thought about it.
It was really strange. I guess we've sort of always just played together, haven't we? It's sort of throughout age group stuff. Surrey, when I then obviously started playing for Surrey and Sam came in, you know, as the youngster, you know, obviously trying to help him out. And then he settled in pretty quickly, found his feet, and then with the Lions and then England. So we've always just, you know, tried to help each other out and played with each other. So to end up playing against each other was a strange feeling. It was a different type of concentration, really, trying to see him running up. There were a lot more things on my mind than usual for those first couple, which was strange. But yeah, I would have liked to put him into the stands for a couple, to be honest. I was disappointed I didn't put him in the stands.
Was there any chirping between you, or was it all quite respectful?
No, I wouldn't say chirping, but there was a bit of banter. I thought so. The last ball I faced, I think he tried to ease. Well, he did. He tried to bounce me actually, which is surprising because he had square leg up. So I wish I'd actually stood still. So I reckon that's my chance to put him into the stands. But he was getting his Yorkers in. So I tried to put him off and walk down the wicket. But I think he, it was good fun. We definitely had a laugh about it afterwards. But like I said, I would have liked to put him into the stands for one.
He certainly got the bragging rights anyway, Tom Curran, after the match was won by the Rajasthan Royals yesterday. Owen Morgan has just come to the crease and got beaten actually by Rana's leg spin there, and lucky to survive. There was a bit of a thought of an LBW appeal, I think. But Tom and Sam are just fantastic competitors, aren't they? And I know actually from talking to their mum, Sarah, the wife, of course, of Kevin Curran, who played for Zimbabwe for many years and sadly died, but she has spawned, she and Kevin have spawned three boys who all play professional cricket. The other one also playing in county cricket, and they're just so ultra competitive. Even she used to say when she had them all round for Sunday lunch when they'd come back from their disparate games, you know. If she asked, say, one of them to go and pick a few apples from the orchard or from the, you know, from the bottom of the garden, they'd all rush out together and see who could get the most, you know. So there is just sort of competitiveness flowing through the Curran boys' veins.
Yeah, absolutely, and that was very evident in the little encounter we watched yesterday. But just coming back to this game for a moment, how many times have you seen Owen Morgan in recent times beaten four times consecutively, and that's what Chahar has just done in spite of attempting the reverse sweep and what have you. I think this is the first time he's actually connected and gotten off the mark. Morgan will have to play a absolute blinder if KKR are to get anywhere near. This is probably heading towards being the most one-sided of the four games that we've seen so far.
Yeah, that's a good point, because actually the games have been close. There's been a super over already, hasn't there, and a win off the last ball or in the last over anyway.
That's right.
And that game yesterday was always going to be probably Rajasthan Royals, but the Chennai Super Kings had a good fist of it towards the end. And actually it's one of the things I think I really like about the IPL is the fact that I know people think it's contrived. I know a lot of English people here think that the IPL's a bit of a fabrication, and how can you support teams that didn't exist 12 years ago and so on. But one of the great things about it is because all the players are jumbled up every 3 years and every team has the same amount of money to spend, a salary cap, which I think now is $12 million, it means that all the teams kind of pretty much start equal and you never know quite who's going to win. And so, firstly, five of the eight founding teams have won the IPL. Only one of them hasn't got to the final. I think that's Delhi Daredevils, now Delhi Capitals. And Capitals. Also, yeah, and also, you know, games go to the wire. And I think 30% of the games last year went to the last ball, or the last over at least. So, you know, it is maybe sort of fantasy cricket in some ways, and it might seem to some people a bit sort of vulgar, but actually it is beautifully packaged and unpredictable sport.
It certainly is, and I think the amongst the other positives, look, the purist is never going to like anything that's not played in white clothing and played on played over 5 days, and one can understand that, because I think those of us who sort of follow cricket will all agree that test match cricket has its own unique place and nothing really compares with it. But when you think about T20 cricket and these leagues and the IPL in particular, for a country as large as India, what it has done is it is, amongst many other benefits, has given an opportunity to a host of younger players who otherwise would probably never have been noticed, might have just made their own sort of state sides in the Ranji Trophy, played a few games, four or five games in a year, really, at a national level, and that would have been their career. But what it has done, it has allowed a lot of them to come out, not just on a national stage, but on an international stage, compete against the best, learn from the best. And I think that is one of the reasons why India particularly, and many other countries around the world that where the leagues are played, are being able to throw up talent at a pace which may not have been the case 7-8 years ago.
Yeah, because it is producing players from sort of outlying cities, whereas probably, I mean, you know obviously better than us, but, you know, sort of 20 to 25 years ago, most of the players for India would have come from the big cities, whereas now I was noticing mm-hmm. that the young bowler, Mavi, comes from Noida, for instance, yeah. which isn't a traditional home of cricket, I don't think, is it? Looks like another wicket
the
way. Karan Pollard has just dismissed Rana for 24. So three down, the Kolkata Knight Riders, and Owen Morgan not making much of a fist of it at the other end. Six not out, but he's miscued about. He's already used up a lot of energy. So Kolkata Knight Riders not doing too well here. With the pitch a little bit sticky, and he's caught at deep cover there, Rana, as he sliced one into the night sky. Good catch by Hardik Pandya there on the boundary. So looking at that that overall picture of Indian cricket, it's drawing on those second and third tier cities, I guess.
Very much is, and to your point about Shivam Mavi, well, Noida actually is one of the three sort of satellite towns that make up the national capital region. So amongst the sort of non-traditional cricketing centres, Noida would be least non-traditional because it's so close to Delhi. But if you think of some of the others, you think about Yashasvi Jaiswal, who opened the batting, or you look at Rituraj Gaikwad, who played but got run out or stumped first ball for Chennai, or Padikkal, who got a 50 on debut in the IPL, come from very, very small towns in the state of Kerala, Uttar Pradesh, and Hyderabad and Andhra Pradesh respectively, and they've all sort of come up through the ranks, moved to the closest city, have stories which are absolute novels or stories that you could write books on, in terms of fairy tales of success coming out and making it big. And I think that's been one of the most heartening aspects of the IPL for me personally. Because cricket, as you know, Simon, is a religion in India. And what this has done is it's probably added somewhere between 10 to 20 times more avenues for potential talented cricketers to be spotted on a global stage and for them to let their bats or ball do the talking, as opposed to the olden days where somehow I think it was important where you came from and who you knew and which club or which team you played for. And that's become much less relevant now. I remember the first ever time in my life I came to England on a little tour with a club from India. I was asked in my very first evening, because I was in the tube and I was wearing a blazer which had the name of the club. An old gentleman sitting next to me had been to India many years ago, so he talked to me about how is it back there now. But there was a lady sitting to the right of me, and she actually said, "Tell me, young man, is it actually true that you can still run into snakes and tigers on the streets of India?" And this is 1984. So, wow. Yeah, not too bad. Stories and legends.
You know, I did hear a true story yesterday, actually, that somebody in Wales getting limestone, some paving done, their child, their three-year-old, five-year-old child came running in and said, "There's a snake in the garden." And the parents were a bit sort of, "What, a snake in Wales, you know?" And they went outside, and apparently it was a very, very venomous viper from somewhere in, I think, Africa, North Africa or somewhere. And it had got there because it got caught in a consignment of limestone delivered from overseas to do this garden. So it was actually a true story of a venomous snake in Wales. But anyway, that's a slightly irrelevant story. Talking of venomous, well, I suppose he's not a snake, but he's certainly venomous. Is Jasprit Bumrah is bowling at the moment to Andre Russell. This is the kind of duel that you really do salivate over. Russell is backing away, trying to smash Bumrah back over his head. Bumrah's fielding him off his own bowling and threatening to throw down the stumps. Rohit Sharma, who made 80 earlier in typical elegant fashion, is clapping away. We just should watch this little encounter here. 79 for 4, Kolkata Knight Riders chasing 196. Bumrah bowling, and down the leg side, a slower ball. Russell backs away a long way and gets a sort of leg by, or half a bat and half a pad, down to fine leg. A bit of a sort of tame little poke at the ball. It's cat and mouse, isn't it? When Russell is batting, he's really only thinking about the leg side, I suppose. But he's so ridiculously strong. And it's not cricket as we grew up watching, is it, either of us, but in the sort of 1970s and 80s? But it still is cricket.
It definitely is cricket. It's just of a different kind. And you're absolutely right. I mean, you don't want Bumrah and Russell in a boxing ring together. That would be a no contest. But when you've got 22 yards separating them in two skill sets, which is slightly different, it makes for a very exciting contest. But this game's not going anywhere near what KKR would have liked it to, Simon. This looks like it's going to be a question of by how many rather than...
It does, I suppose. But, I mean, all these teams sort of think to themselves, sixes, a few sixes make all the difference, and you can catch up very quickly. I suppose there's a long way to go here, 114 or 44 even. You feel that's even beyond Andre Russell and Owen Morgan. He's just been hit in the stomach, and the ball ricocheted onto the stumps and didn't knock the bails off. Some bizarre cricket, actually, today. One or two other kind of quite strange incidents. Taxing the umpires. Yesterday we saw an umpire give somebody out caught, and then the ball didn't carry to Dhoni. They reviewed the catch and gave it not out, and then it turned out that the batsman was LBW. That was Tom Curran, actually. So Morgan getting in all sorts of trouble here with a short ball from Bumrah. How the ball didn't knock the bails off. Well, I've seen this happen a few times, and it's partly to do with the rigidity of the modern stumps. They're made of kind of carbon fibre rather than wood, and they don't vibrate in the same way as wooden stumps. They're stuck into the ground because they've got stump cameras embedded in them. So they're much more rigid. So that's one of the reasons why.
Yeah, remember the Australia World Cup game at the Oval in the World Cup, where David Warner, very similar thing happened. I think it was Bhuvneshwar Kumar and ricocheted off the pad, went and hit the stumps almost like at a proper pace, and there was a little jiggle on the bails, but they stayed in place. So yeah, it's not the first time, and you're absolutely right. I mean, I think it's just the modern equipment. But just looking at the fluency with which Owen Morgan was playing back in England, and the troubles that he's facing here just tells you how different it is, isn't it, Simon, to be able to move and adapt, even though you've actually been actively playing cricket, even for someone of his ability.
That's very true. He likes the ball coming onto the bat, clearly. And England have always struggled, actually, to bat in Abu Dhabi and Dubai and places like that, English players. I've not quite figured out why, because, I mean, the pitches don't do a huge amount. They don't spin wildly or sort of break up or anything, but the ball just comes off at a slightly different pace. And in that last over, Morgan was through his shot a couple of times to those short balls from Jasprit Bumrah. It's funny, but you know, you wouldn't think that England has some of the quickest pitches in the world. You'd think that in the past it would be Australia or perhaps even the West Indies from the 1980s. But it's true, actually. England now does have some of the quickest pitches, somewhere like Old Trafford or even actually the Aegeus Bowl. You know, the ball comes onto the bat really probably better than perhaps anywhere in the world, except maybe at the Gabba or in Perth, where they've still managed to maintain the quickness of the speed of the pitch, even though they've moved stadiums.
New stadium. And maybe that's what, Pat Cummins couldn't make the adjustment to, because he was one of the people that everyone was looking forward to. I think particularly the KKR fans saying we've got the most expensive buy of the last auction. And what happens? He gets plastered for like 49 of three overs. Because I think the length that he was bowling just allowed Rohit Sharma and Surya Yadav to just keep plonking him over mid-wicket into the stands.
Well, that's a really good point.
Again, to prove the point that adjustments,
No, that is a very good point. And I was going to bring up that thing about Pat Cummins, because one of the other things that's quite interesting about the IPL is that, you know, a lot of money is spent on these players and, you know, players earning $2 million. There is Andre Russell trying to smack it over long off and not really making any contact, ball going hitting high up the bat and only plopping out for a single on the offside. So it's 83 for four in the 14th over, so way off the target, 113 required off 40. But it does show, actually, a couple of things. Often you find that the big names and the big stars actually get found out and don't perform quite as expected. Someone like Chris Gayle can be hit and miss, obviously, although he's got the most sixes ever hit in the IPL, over 300 sixes, I noticed he's hit, whereas Rohit Sharma's only managed 200, I say only. But not only do some of the star players don't necessarily succeed as perhaps their price tags suggest they should, but also you get a situation like Pat Cummins, such a successful test player, and his game based on relentlessness of his pace and persistence and hitting the top of off stump, and suddenly playing on these slower pitches, Rohit Sharma's just picking him off that slightly short of a length and, you know, walloping him out of the ground for six.
Yep, and big ones too. I mean, they weren't sort of, and as we said before, this is a large cricket ground. It's not one of those, it's not Eden Park or Sharjah for sure. So to that extent, it's a proper cricket ground with long boundaries. But yes, I think adjustments across the board are difficult. I wonder how hard it is, just looking at some of the players on television. We can notice also the fact that in spite of their schedules to work out and, you know, training and what have you, there's a few extra kilos going around on every cricket team at the moment. And it's going to be interesting to see how quickly people get into the sort of groove, if you will, and you know, dust off the rustiness and start performing at the ability at which these magnificent athletes are actually geared to and want to perform. Do you think, Simon, that based on your conversations with folks who are playing in England, that this whole sort of bio bubble that in which these players live takes a different kind of toll in their ability to perform on the cricket pitch?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And in fact, it was MS Dhoni was saying, wasn't he, the other day that, you know, he felt sort of rusty, really. And the Chennai Super Kings, whether they were using this as an excuse, I don't know, but they had an extra bit of quarantine because some of their players were COVID positive. And so they had an extra 14 days where they weren't able to do the sort of practice and preparation that they probably wanted to. And so, you know, maybe they were caught a bit short yesterday as a result. I think I think it's a mental thing more than a physical thing. Obviously, the intensity of the test series we had this summer in England, without crowds, of course, was impressive. You know, the quality of the cricket was great. I think, you know, by the end, the players were really ready to go home, though, because some of them hadn't seen their families for a long time. And being sort of cooped up in the same hotel day after day with the same people endlessly and eating the same food from the same tables, often facing the wall because you can't, you're not supposed to sort of interact with anyone, and you're supposed to have distance and so on. Yeah, I think it was pretty tough, actually. And this scenario in the UAE, at least some of the... I mean, I was told today that the Rajasthan Royals... I wanted to get Andrew McDonald, their coach, on, and I'll get him on at some point. But I was told today that the Rajasthan Royals are having a day off at the beach. So, you know, that's the advantage of being in the UAE, is that at least there is a sort of... Some of these hotels have beaches right next door, and obviously they can relax. They've got their families with them in some cases as well. So it's a bit more normal, perhaps. Morgan playing well here. He's just hit a big six off James Pattinson and then pumped one down the ground here. So he's trying his best, but 105 off 35 does seem a tall order. What else has cropped up? I mean, I heard you on... BBC last month talking about MS Dhoni when he'd announced his retirement from international cricket.
Yes.
And I mean, you know, he's amazing though, isn't he? He's still up for it in this. And he did take a bit of time to get going yesterday towards the end of the innings, sort of dropped himself down to number seven. But then he hit three sixes off three balls at the end. I mean, he's still sort of got it, hasn't he?
Well, you look at people like him, you look at people like de Villiers. And you wonder, you know, what is it that keeps these guys going? What is it that their athleticism, their hand-eye coordination, and most importantly, their desire? And you heard, you know, de Villiers say after his game and after his knock that, you know, he just felt that, yeah, it was all coming out well and he was enjoying it. You just looked at McCullum, who's the coach of Calcutta Knight Riders. He might actually have to get into the playing 11 if KKR don't start performing soon. So it's remarkable how well these guys have are able to do things. And of course, when you're Mahendra Singh Dhoni, the reality is, I think he's found a unique way, and maybe that's just the nature of the man, to deal with all the pressure. We talked about all the pressure that people like Tendulkar and others carried throughout their cricketing careers. I think what MS was able to do was he carried a different kind of pressure, because it was almost as if he was the torchbearer and the inspiration for this young India as it sort of became a little more assertive and went about finding its own place in the world. And to that extent, I think he's done far greater service than any sportsman, because he's given the opportunity for so many young boys and girls in all parts of the country to believe. So it was a poignant moment in time, and Dhoni had to do it his way on Instagram.
yes, exactly. And I mean, you made the point as well. Or we've talked about this before, actually. As Andre Russell goes for a huge hack and slices it over backward point, so he's starting to get motoring. He's only got 10 from 9 balls, but certainly he's starting to swing his arms with some intent. It's 100, just coming up for 100 for 4 now, Kolkata, so still needing nearly 90 to win from about 5 overs. It's pretty much a remote possibility. But Dhoni, his career almost perfectly parallels or mirrors the swelling, the growth of the Indian middle classes. So has he been a sort of torchbearer for what... the lower middle class people can achieve?
I think it's fair to say that, but it's also just as much as he's probably representative or torchbearer, whatever you want to call it. I think it's also been that whole process has actually helped people like Dhoni. I mean, if the Dhoni story had begun, let's say, 5 or 7 years before it actually did, I'm not sure he would have had the same opportunities and the same kind of success. For starters, I don't know if he would have been spotted playing in a small town like Ranchi. I don't know if the coal fields would have actually picked him up, or the Eastern Railways would have given him the job of a ticket collector, and so on and so forth. So the ifs and buts are there. But when you look back today on his time, you're absolutely right, Simon. It kind of coincided with the what I would actually call is the growing confidence of the middle classes, the belief in people that they could explore the world, explore the country, explore careers. You didn't have to be only an engineer or a doctor or a chemist to be able to be something in the country. The software revolution, the whole digital piece, and India in under whichever leadership beginning to sort of assert itself on the world stage. All of those things and the economic dividend all coming together were things that I think are representative of what Mahendra Singh Dhoni has been to India. But that's also been replicated across sports. So you look at, you know, things like archery and hockey and tennis. And now you've got a surge of young people coming through from different parts of the country in each of these disciplines. And that can only augur well for a nation which, believe it or not, has one individual Olympic gold medal.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it? I mean, what an amazing opportunity it could be if cricket could eventually get back into the Olympics. I say back because, of course, it was an Olympic sport in 1900, where the UK team beat the French team, which was largely English, in a final. That perhaps is the final nail in Kolkata Knight Riders' coffin, as Bumrah clean bowls Russell, seeking to hit that one over the stand at Abu Dhabi and missing. Bumrah's such a clever bowler. I mean, he's been bowling at both Andre Russell and Owen Morgan, two of the best one-day batsmen in the world. He has figures of 1 for 3 from 2.1 overs. So he's bowled 13 balls, remarkable. Gone for 3 runs and taken a wicket. And he's sort of opening his hands there as if to say, well, there you are, what do you expect, really? To the world. I mean, that unfortunately I think is the end of the game. 100 for 5, Kolkata Knight Riders now still needing 96 to win from 4 and a bit overs. They're taking a time out, so that's a little pause in which perhaps we can just looking at the IPL in a little bit more detail. I mean, one of the things I find sort of fascinating about the change in India, really, and I've been coming to India for or going to India for, I don't know, 40 years, is that when you drove around India in the 90s and, you know, even maybe in the early 2000s, and those massive billboards were up showing Bollywood stars and, you know, film stars were drinking Coca-Cola and things like that. And it was very much selling the kind of idea of fantasy and the movies and, you know, escape your fairly sort of ordinary life for a couple of hours watching a great movie or drinking a Coke, I suppose. Whereas now, when you drive around Indian cities, you've got adverts for interiors and beautiful apartment blocks and makeup and, you know, hair products and things like that. And interestingly, the sponsors of the Rajasthan Royals this year are sanitary towels, aren't they? Nine, which is sanitary towel. They're trying to draw attention, raise awareness about women's periods. I mean, what an amazing change in society.
Indeed. In that sense, there's been a whole movement from convert raw material and export raw material out of the country, let someone else manufacture it, to a situation where manufacture in India, now the whole services industry picking up in terms of hospitality, greater awareness. And I must tell you that in the last 8 or 9 years, this government has actually taken up certain issues which all of us have always wondered why they haven't been a priority. I mean, you've come to India, you say, for 4 decades, Simon, and you know that much as we may talk about the good things, the general level of public hygiene has not been something that India has been able to fix. But in the last 2 or 3 years, in particular, both local and federal governments, there's been a tremendous focus on it. Just the amount of construction of public loos, the whole area of women's sanitation and health, like you mentioned, the sanitary towels as a sponsor or, for example, equal representation for women in corporate life or on management boards of companies. It's all beginning to resemble and sort of resonate to convey a more aware, attempting to be a more egalitarian society. It's going to take generations for that to happen, as you know. But there are these movements which are beginning to spawn, and I think that can only augur well, because to have great sports people, I think you can have a much better chance of that happening if you have a healthy society, and vice versa. One feeds off the other. And to that extent, if we can get off our rears and actually get out and start participating in sport at a young age, bring it into curriculums, a lot more coaching across multi-disciplines, not just cricket, I think the opportunities are immense.
Mm. A new batsman has come to the crease, Nikhil Naik. His birthplace plays for Maharashtra. His birthplace is Savantwadi
on the coast, just north of Goa.
Okay.
About 120 kilometers north of Goa.
Hmm.
And he's just another one of those people that we're talking about where, you know, ordinarily you would not have assumed that he would be getting such a platform, and good for him that he is.
Hmm. Yeah, Bumrah 1-for-4 from 2.3 overs. It sounds like a test match, the bowling figures.
Unbelievable.
There. And Mumbai Indians at this point, after 15.3 overs, 148-for-3. Kolkata Knight Riders 101-for-5. Pretty much, if Morgan gets out, they can kiss this game goodbye. And I think he is out. He's just been caught behind. Bumrah across angling across him. Morgan with a big swish, trying to drive it over extra cover. And he's departed for 16 from 19 balls. Bumrah now has 2-for-4 from 2.4 overs. Beautiful symmetry in that bowling statistic. And that really must be pretty much the end for the Kolkata Knight Riders, 101-for-6. We were talking about the great bowlers and great players that have been attracted to this tournament, Prakash. And I always find it interesting to see what they want, what they seek out of the IPL, what they want to get out of it. And I chatted to Steve Smith actually this time last year when the tournament was in a more normal circumstance, obviously being played in India. And I was in Jaipur and I just watched him batting for about 2 hours practicing before a game. And so I thought I'd ask him afterwards, you know, what drew him to the IPL? And he came up with quite a lot of different reasons. And believe it or not, he didn't mention money once. So just have a listen to what he thinks are the reasons why the IPL is very useful for him.
Training and playing with the best players around the world, learning off them, how they go about their business, how they prepare, playing under pressure. I learned a lot about that. Playing as an overseas player, you know, there's only four of them, and sometimes you've got some, you know, some quality players sitting on the bench behind you as well that could be playing in your spot. So playing under pressure, particularly in front of, obviously we know India is such a, you know, cricket mad nation, absolutely love it, and it's a great place to play, but fans, you know, just get stuck into the game as you know, they come through the gates in huge numbers, and you're playing so many back-to-back games, you face lots of similar scenarios. So say one day you need, I don't know, 50 or 30 at the end or something, and you stuff it up, you don't quite get there. You know, you might be in that same situation again 2 days later, and you can sort of think to yourself, right, what did I do the other day? That wasn't right. You know, maybe this time round I'm going to look to hit this bowler or hit this guy with the wind this way, or, you know, just sum up the scenarios. And it's great that you're able to play so many back-to-back games against quality oppositions and be able to, I guess, learn how to play under pressure. So I think also training in the in India, sometimes you face some wickets that are a bit tired, and you can learn and get a feel for, you know, facing a spinner, which ball's going to skid on, which one's going to spin. You know, I think it certainly helped my playing of spin bowling in those conditions. And yeah, it's just a great learning experience. You can bat for hours and hours in the nets, and I guess that's one of the best parts of being in India. There's so many quality young bowlers that want to just keep on bowling to you, and while they want to do that, I'll continue to face them.
and doesn't he too? He absolutely does capitalise on that that opportunity. He's a sort of practice addict anyway. But just watching him, the way he goes about the preparation for these games, and he played well last night, actually, didn't he? After really not doing much at all in England and having that sort of concussion issue, he played in his inimitable way extremely well yesterday and sort of anchored the innings.
He did, and we've been talking about some young talent, and you saw Sanju Samson. Way he batted. Mm. I mean, not too many people can put Steve Smith in the shade, but as long as he was there, he was really playing some brilliant cricket, and he can't find a slot in the Indian T20 team. So that just gives you a sense of what kind of talent and capability exists in the Indian cricketing arena, if you will. Mm. And the IPL is a perfect stage for people to showcase it. I remember when it first started, there was a lot of concern about whether it would mean that the techniques would go haywire and would five-day games no longer last for 5 days and so on and so forth. But I think what it's shown, as indeed has T20 cricket around the world, that some skills have actually become sharper, haven't they? Mm. Because of the needs of the format of the game. And of course, players who are great at playing good, authentic cricket, are good at T20 as well, because they're just good cricketers. Simple as that. Another wicket goes down, and it's not much left now in this game, really.
No, that was Nikhil Nayak who just holed out to mid-wicket, and Hardik Pandya took a fairly simple catch off Trent Bolt. So Mumbai Indians really dominating in this match. And do you see them as the favourites, Prakash?
Well, it's because it's being played in the UAE and there isn't the traditional home and away format. I think, to be honest with you, Simon, I think that this is probably one of the editions where the teams, as you said earlier in the program when we were talking, are probably very, very well balanced. And really, I don't see a clear favorite. Chennai have been hampered by the absence of people like Harbhajan and Suresh Raina. Mumbai have always been a contender, but they've just won their first ever game, or will win their first ever game in the UAE. This is the seventh attempt. In the first six times they've played in the UAE, they've always lost. So Mumbai will always be in the mix. I think Calcutta will come back. They've got a very strong side as well. RCB are resurgent. It's not often that you see them as well equipped. They've got their bowling, I think, a little bit better this time, in spite of Mitchell Stark's late pullout. I think the side that appears a little bit weak to me is actually Sunrisers. They seem to have very, very good batting prowess, but I'm not so sure that they've got the bowling mix right, but we'll only wait and watch. So I don't think Mumbai are necessarily favourites. Yes, Mumbai and Chennai, as the two teams that have made the playoffs most often, will probably be in the mix, but I'm actually putting my money on one of the three northern sides making it to the final this time. That's Rajasthan, Kings XI Punjab, and Delhi Capitals.
Yes.
At least one of those in the finals.
I wonder if it's going to be down to where they play, because there are very different scenarios, really. There's a good shot there from Mavi. He's pulled one away from Trent Bolt for four, but it's all a bit academic, I think, with Calcutta Knight Riders 112 for seven. The Sharjah pitch, and clearly Tom Curran was talking about this after the game yesterday, a lot of dew, and the second innings, tough work for the bowlers, also with very short boundaries. So that explains why, you know, you need a big score if you're batting first in Sharjah to ensure victory there. But then on these other grounds, Abu Dhabi and Dubai, much bigger playing areas, maybe slower pitches. Sometimes there's dew and sometimes there isn't. Very hot, isn't it? 40 degrees at times. I wonder if it will depend on, you know, and I suppose it'll depend also on the range of bowling options you have to adapt to the different conditions, which is what a tournament should be all about, I suppose.
In a way, yes. And I think, you know, teams which have a good spin department, I think, may well find themselves playing a much bigger role as the wickets get older, because they're obviously limited number of strips on which all these games are going to be played. So teams like CSK, I mean, we haven't seen Imran Tahir play yet, for example, may well come into their own. Sides which don't have a strong spin department may actually struggle. And the point you make about playing in these venues is so true, because you saw the other day in the first game that 160 proved to be a very close game. And here, you know, 216 yesterday, except for Jofra Archer going completely berserk, might have been a much closer game than it turned out to be. And here at the same ground now in Abu Dhabi, where the first game was played, we're finding that 195 is a very, very comfortable win, with KKR just not getting anywhere near.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we're just looking at the...
So you're right.
Yeah, so just looking at, talking of sort of uncertainty and unpredictable outcomes, last year, three teams ended up on 18 points, Mumbai Indians, Chennai and Delhi, all finished up on 18 points after 14 games. So these teams, there's not much to separate them, really. And that keeps it interesting. Pat Cummins is doing his best to completely maul Jasprit Bumrah's figures, and he's done that with the second six off this over. It's so annoying, actually, when you've done the hard work and got the two big wickets and two for four you got, and then suddenly it's about 2 for 24 from a couple of blows from Pat Cummins getting his own back on the Mumbai Indians team after being mauled himself. 59 from three overs, I think he went for. Was it 49? Certainly,
yeah,
a lot
49
of runs.
49
runs.
Three. Yeah.
So.
No, you're right.
Yeah. Anyway, this game is sort of petering out. I mean, I've done a book, a new book about this whole thing. It's called A New Innings, written with Manoj Badali, the owner of the Rajasthan Royals, and yeah, it's just changed the whole dynamic of both the cricket economy and the calendar, really, because all the players now want to play in this tournament. They, pretty much every one of them has put it down in the first thing they put down on their calendar is the IPL and how they can try and get into the auction. And it generates a third of the money in the world cricket economy, $600 million out of about 1,900. So it really has become an incredible sort of feature of the global sporting calendar in the space of 12 years. And what we explore with this book really is, you know, is how it works economically, how they've managed to get the broadcasting rights so expensive, $2.5 billion paid by Star for 5 years of covering this tournament. And then that means that the private investors are happy because they can get a bit of profit from the money that they've put into the tournament. It means they can buy, they can spend money on players as well and support staff and really go into the nth degree and the greatest detail in terms of making this show the best cricketing show on the road. And some people don't like it, I know that, but there's no stone unturned to try and make it as good as it possibly can be.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, right? I mean, there are business leaders, there are political leaders around the world that one may like or not like, and yet if they are making an impact, you have to acknowledge that they are making an impact. And what you've said, the stats that you've talked about, absolutely true. We'll definitely look forward to having a read of the book one of these days when things get a little bit better, and I think the book makes its way to India. I don't think it's there yet, or maybe it is.
It's making its way.
Yeah, it might be a little slow getting here, but we will get there. But to your point about what the IPL means, I mean, it's so true that, you know, even the women's game now, everyone's saying that, you know, if there is a proper women's version of the IPL, it will help the women's game. And that can only be good for the game cricket if more and more people get interested. Talking about the economic impact of it, we've already talked about how lives are being changed. In fact, there's a little joke that goes around India often, which says, if the IPL, you know, was if people who were sort of changing their lives as a result of the IPL, let's say building a new house or buying a new house or whatever, started putting on the names, there'd probably be over 250 IPL homes dotted around the world, because so many people have been able to make a distinct change in their standard of life, or have sort of been able to create a little nest for themselves. Because the reality is, a sportsman's life is never unlimited, and can be cut short by bad injuries here or there. And so if economically it is helping the cricketing fraternity in general, I think it has to be acknowledged as a positive thing.
That's a good point. And Rahul Dravid has a quote in my book, or our book, I should say, which he talks about the great victims of cricket. And he says that there were so many people he knew who played Ranji Trophy. So sort of, you know, they were professional players, but only paid a small amount of money. They didn't ever play for India. And at age 30, you know, they didn't get into the Ranji Trophy team anymore. So they were back in club cricket, maybe coaching or something, and earning very little, and struggling to make ends meet, having given the best years of their life to cricket. And he felt that, you know, the advent of the IPL had given a lot of those people the opportunity to earn some proper money, whether as players or coaches or support staff or whatever. But it had created a new cricket economy in India, which was good for everybody. And I suppose it's become something now that, you know, parents do take seriously as a career path to their children, which they wouldn't have done 20 years ago.
No, absolutely. And you know what it's done is after the IPL, you've had similar professional leagues come up across a variety of sports: table tennis, badminton, lawn tennis, wrestling, boxing. And all of these are doing for those sports people in different scale, of course, but doing the same kind of service or the same kind of opportunities are getting opened up for people across sport. And that can only be good for families, for livelihoods, and hopefully to build a sporting culture.
You mentioned, you know, the good it's been, the opportunities it's created for women as well, and, you know, women's cricket and so on. In fact, there is a women's game going on, an international going on at the moment between England and the West
England
Indies.
England and West Indies, yeah.
Yeah, 98 for six. Are England at the moment, so they're sort of stuttering a bit, having won the first game quite comfortably in this short series of one-day internationals. What about women in Indian cricket? And there was talk about the there being a sort of support women's IPL, and they've sort of trialled teams and a sort of shorter type of tournament in the past. But so where is women's cricket going in India?
Well, I think it's going very well, I must confess, in the last two or three years in particular, Simon. They've had two World Cup finals, the 50-over World Cup final in at Lord's, against which they lost to England, and then the 20-over World Cup final that they lost to Australia at the MCG. So they've made two consecutive finals, albeit in two different formats. There's a bunch of very, very talented girls coming through, a lot of young girls now playing at the state level as well. The infrastructure that the BCCI is, of course, able to afford and provide, I think, is encouraging women to come out and play cricket. And I think there will be, between the 1st and the 10th of November, I hear, the sort of mini IPL women's league, where typically they create three teams and they play a little bit of a round robin, which I think last year was in Jaipur, if I remember correctly. That will get played. And I think it's a question of now setting the calendars right so that it doesn't clash with, hopefully, the 100 next year happens in England, the WBBL, of course, in Australia, and then there is some version of an IPL where all these international women athletes or cricketers can come together and participate. And that can only be good for the women's game as well, because, again, it will give people the opportunity to participate, to you know, commercial brands and so on and so forth that are, let's say, more focused on, let's say, women-oriented brands. I'm not trying to be insensitive to gender issues, just simply saying that, you know, maybe there are more cosmetic brands which may want to to sort of support and sponsor those kind of sporting events. And that can only be good, again, for the expansion of the game, because the only way we're going to ever get cricket being played more and more is going to be if more countries and more people in the world play it. And what is remarkable is that in many ways, women's cricket is being played in countries where men in that country haven't done much. So if you look at Thailand that qualified for the Women's World Cup, if you look at Chile and Argentina and Austria and Germany, I mean, these are countries which where cricket is now actively being played by women. Brazil, and you never thought that that there would be cricket in these countries of any competitive order. And from what I hear from my friends in the ICC women's wing, the expansion of the game is actually getting a big boost from women's cricket.
That's tremendous to know. And in a way, again, it's probably sort of partly influenced by the IPL, which in the men's game now has 75 countries playing T20 internationals, because the ICC realised belatedly that they needed to give all of these countries, sort of associate countries, official status. And so you're getting countries like the Maldives and Serbia and, you know, some of the countries in the... even countries like Spain, Gibraltar recently played in a tournament down in Spain. So it's a brilliant expansion of the game that we're seeing. That has been IPL has been a catalyst for sort of thing, really.
We've got to get ready for the Swedes to become great fielders, because I just read the other day that Jonty Rhodes has taken over the role of national coach for Sweden. So there you go.
Yeah, we're actually trying to
Exciting times ahead.
Yeah, exciting times ahead. We're actually trying to speak to him for the Cricketer magazine for the next issue to talk about his role, because, you know, that really is quite a sort of step into the dark and a brilliant effort by Sweden to recruit Jonty Rhodes. Well, we're just seeing the last rites of this game. That, in fact, is the last ball. It was a stumping by Quinton de Kock and the final wicket, well, actually the ninth wicket, fell for the Kolkata Knight Riders. There's one ball to go, but it really is a very comprehensive victory for the Mumbai Indians. I think it's time for us to say goodbye after seeing really a bit of a mismatch today for the first time in this year's IPL tournament. We'll be back to do another one of these in 2 or 3 days' time. Prakash, very good of you to give up your time today to talk to us from the depths of India, the dark depths. It's probably late at night there, and all the streets are pretty dead, are they?
Oh, completely. It's just coming up to be a little 10 minutes past 11:30. So yes, on a good day, it may not have been looking so bad, but nowadays 9:30, and I think everything pretty much shuts down. What little's open, we all live in the hope of this pandemic solving or going away in some shape and form, maybe a vaccine, maybe a miracle, I don't know what. But just take this opportunity to thank you, Simon, for having me, and wishing all our listeners, wherever they may be, both now or later on in the podcast, or whichever form, please stay safe. We hope that you and your families and your loved ones are well, and wish you Godspeed.
Well, echo that. Thank you very much, Prakash. And just to say, the next episode of this will feature none other than Sir Geoffrey Boycott. I'm popping from one extreme to the other, from looking at the IPL. I'm popping up the road to see Geoffrey in Boston Spa to find out about his life. Of course, he hasn't been on the airwaves much this summer, and I'm sure he's got plenty to say. So I'll report back later in the week. In the meantime, I hope you've enjoyed our little The Analyst Inside Cricket live at the IPL. Prakash Wakankar, thank you very much for your time, and thank you very much for listening. Podcast Network.